So let's see, it was about 6 or 7 years ago now, I heard a teaching from another pastor that sort of brought me back into the Christian fold, and it was very revolutionary for me. And so I ended up going back and rereading a lot of the source material that was used. And so this one's been knocking around for a while. And so this is kind of my best remixing or representation of a lot of that source material as I kind of went through it. So it's kind of a lot, but we'll get through it. And I slimmed some stuff down. And it's called More Than Enough for Everybody. So we're going to start in Isaiah 65. If you have a Bible, you can turn there or on your phone or whatever. This is after exile, so the people of God have basically lost everything. It's that sense of, I've just gone through the divorce. It's the morning after the divorce, or the morning after you lost your job, or whatever. Just this total despondent disjoy. Everything has just, your world's been turned upside down, basically. And it's in this that hope springs out. And so we'll start chapter 65, verse 17. And my heading says, New Heavens and a New Earth. See, oh, this is God speaking. See, I will create new heavens and a new earth, or renewed heavens and a renewed earth is how you could translate that. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. For I will create Jerusalem, an earthly city, to be a delight, and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem, an actual city located on earth, rocks, trees, bricks, streets, shops, and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and crying will be heard in it no more. They will build houses and dwell in them. He's talking about heaven. They will build houses and dwell in them. They will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. No longer will they build houses and others live in them, or plant and others eat. Which is that sense of, like, I work and I work and I work, and by the time I get the reward for what I've worked for, it's gone. Like, I work all week, and by the time I get my paycheck, I already have to spend it on the bills that were due last month. So it's like, no longer is there going to be this curse of, like, time clocks and paychecks and not having enough. Like, I planted this tree, but by the time the tree is producing fruit, I'm gone, and someone else gets to enjoy that. So no more will be this, like, curse with work. So will be the days of my people. My chosen ones will long enjoy the works of their hands. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, says the Lord. So he's painting this picture of heaven, and right in the center of it all is they will build houses, they will plant vineyards. Now this idea of vineyards comes up over and over again in the scriptures, and I'm going to show you two examples in a second. So this symbol of wine continues to be associated with heaven. So if you turn a little bit further along in the story to Joel, it's really short. It's only 3 chapters long, so no one ever teaches on it. But we're going to go to the very end of it. He gets no love, so I'm going to give him some love today. Blessings for God's people is the heading, verse 17 of chapter 3. Then you will know that I, the Lord your God, dwell in Zion, my holy hill. Jerusalem will be holy. Never again will foreigners invade her. In that day, the mountains will drip with new wine, and the hills will flow with milk. All the ravines of Judah will run with water. And a little bit further along in the story, Amos is another prophet. And for the first 6, 7, 8 and a half chapters or so, Amos is on a bit of a rant. And then he kind of switches gears into this hope thing. Israel's restoration is the heading, chapter 9, verse 11. In that day, I will restore David's fallen tent. I will repair its broken places, restore its ruins, and build it as it used to be. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when the reaper will be overtaken by the one who plows. So your work is going to be so rewarding that you won't even have to try. It's just going to be so, the land is going to be so fertile that the work week is going to be a joy for you. And the planter by the one treading grapes, new wine will drip from the mountains and flow from all the hills. I will bring back my exiled people. They will rebuild the ruined cities and live in them. They will plant vineyards and drink their wine. They will make gardens and eat their fruit. So this symbol of wine being associated with heaven is all over, particularly the prophets and then into the New Testament as well, and we'll get there. But in order to explain this, I need five volunteers, and this will not be embarrassing, maybe. Anybody? Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Anybody? Anybody? Yeah! That's the excitement I want to see. Three? Okay, we need two more. Yeah, you're up. Four? Anyone? Five? Last one? You're up? Okay, five. Great. Wonderful.
I just came up here because there's
food. Okay, yeah, totally. All right, who loves vegetables? Tomatoes? Anyone?
I love
tomatoes. No? It's all you. Okay, we'll save this one till last. And then fruit, I have Fig Newtons. There you go. Okay, and then we have bread, so great. Wheat, there you go, great. And then I have corn, so corn chips, so that's you. Great. Wonderful. And then you get, of course, yes, right. Okay. So what these passages are describing, it isn't describing some sort of mystical land where things fall out of the sky. What the prophets are describing is a whole healthy barter economy where everything is in the right relationship and its proper place. So there's a couple things that make a barter economy work. And so we're going to explore those for just a second. We don't really have anything in our culture that's related to this. Our grocery shopping structure is more like a single transactionary structure. So you go to the store, I give the money, you give me the food, end of transaction. We're done. You walk out, you're not obligated to shop there again, unless you have a Rouse card, in which case you feel guilty not shopping there. But that's it. There's no relationship forged. It's just a one-off transaction. This is fundamentally different because everybody needs what the other person has. So if you grind your corn and make corn chips, but you want salsa, who do you need to talk to? Totally. And if you make... Here, I have salsa with me. Here, if you make salsa and you want to eat it with chips, who do you talk to? Right. And if you want to make bruschetta, oh, easy there. You're ruining the party. So if you want to make bruschetta, you talk to him as well, right? And if you guys want to throw a wedding party or whatever, who do you need to talk to? Sam. That's right. Exactly. So everybody needs what the other person has. Now, for this to work well, we have three... Right again. There we go. Okay, right. So it's built on three things. First of all, trust. This is not the single transactionary structure that we have. You know this guy, and you know, and everybody, when you form a business relationship with them, it's a relationship. Oh, yeah, if you want to put breading on the outside of your figs, you need her. Yeah. You're included. Okay. Yeah, you're doing good. You're doing really good. So trust. So if, let's say that you're doing really, really well, and you have just tons and tons and figs, and let's say you're doing really, really well and having tons and tons, but you're not doing, you're struggling a little bit. You're having a bad year. Well, everybody needs what the other person has. So in your abundance, what are you guys motivated to do?
Help her out.
That's right. So if she's sinking down, the motivation is to bring her back up. Likewise, if you're starting to accumulate way, way too much, and you have a lot, and you're starting to lord it over people or demand things of people, what are you guys going to do? Right? You're going to back off. You're going to start to withhold things. So built into this system is a limiting mechanism that keeps things equal and fair at a fair price. Now, the second thing that works here is the ability to generate. This sort of system is not built on the redistribution of wealth. This isn't about just reshuffling the deck. And if you read anything about economics, you know that redistribution of wealth doesn't really work in most contexts. This is about empowering each of them to contribute something. It's something that's very much needed. So everyone here has the ability to generate. And when that happens, there's more than enough for everybody. And the last thing is that our economy, our word economy, is built on the Greek word oikos, which means house. So that's a good way to think of this. It's like a household. And in a household, you try to make enough money and bring in enough resources so that everyone can eat. And there's more than enough at the table for everybody. And when you do that, it's a household well run. So thank you guys very much. I need that back. Thanks. Great. Good. Thanks. Yeah, you can have that later. Yeah, right. yeah, well, we're talking about sharing, so I guess I should have. So to summarize, I would say this. For the prophets, heaven is a renewed, restored, reclaimed, rediscovered earth and economy. They do not locate heaven somewhere else. It's a renewed, restored, reclaimed, rediscovered earth and economy. Or if you want to really boil it down, I would say it this way next. Heaven is here. Here. not somewhere else in space or time. Actually, you can't find one verse in all of the scriptures that says that people die and go to heaven someplace else. Not one verse in all of the scriptures is the final resting place of humans somewhere else. It's always here. So what about John 14? Nope, that's wedding language. What about 2 Peter 3? That's 1st and 2nd Genesis language. What about the citizenship section in Philippians? Nope, that's about Roman imperialism. 2 Corinthians 5? Nope. 1 Corinthians 15? Nope. Nowhere in the scriptures is the final resting place of humans somewhere else. It's always here. So this has a couple dimensions to it, so let's explore those. Down. Very good. Wine as a symbol of heaven in the Bible is about wholeness. It's about healthy relationships. And this has three dimensions to it. It's in 3D. Next. It's about wholeness with others, which is the barter economy that we sort of saw. Next, it's about wholeness with God. And these examples are particularly all over the Psalms. I'll look at a couple key ones next. Proverbs 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not in on your own understanding, and all your ways give to Him. He will make your path straight. We all memorized that one as kids. But if you read on, it says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and flee from corruption. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Honor the Lord with what you have, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. So wine is symbolic of God's blessing on something. Next, this one is Psalm 1. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. His land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains them. So wine, a lot of wine, or the blessing of wine, is symbolic that you have favor with God. They even had a prayer next. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam bori pri hagefen is how you would say that, or how you would brutally butcher that. It means praise to you, Adonai Yahweh, sovereign one of the universe, maker of the fruit of the vine. And so they would say that every time they would drink wine, to remind themselves that this is a blessing from God. The flip side is next, in Isaiah 5, woe to you who add house to house and join field to field till no space is left and you live alone in the land. The Lord Almighty has declared in my hearing, surely the great houses will become desolate, the fine mansions left without occupants. A 10-acre vineyard will produce only a bath of wine. An omer of seed will yield only an ephah of grain. What does it say? When the Lord's favor is not on something, one of the ways you know is that the wine dries up. So we have wholeness with others in the barter economy, and we have wholeness with God. And then this last one I didn't really get until I went to South Africa a few years ago. This is a picture of Stellenbosch. We were in Cape Town, but we went kind of up the coast. It's a beautiful drive. The ocean is like right next to the road. It's not like the one where there's a little bit, it's like right on the same level. It's gorgeous. And you drive right by Khayelitsha, which is the largest township in South Africa. It's nuts. It's where they film portions of District 9, I think. Absolutely insane. But when you get to Stellenbosch, it's like the heart of wine country in South Africa. It's next to Franschhoek, which is also beautiful. So if you're there, make sure you go here. And so when you explore this area, you see lots of master winemakers. And so we ducked into one of the shops, and they do these tastings where they have a list of all of the different elements of the wine. And out of the winemaker's viewing, they'll pour a glass, and he'll come out, and he'll start, like, ringing through this stuff. Like, he takes a sip, and he's like, yeah, this was probably harvested early in the spring on the east side of a hill, and the ocean was probably north, and it tastes like there's two grapes here, and they were blended at this ratio, and the chemical composition of the soil is this, and the barrel that the wood was made out of is this, and they just, like, plow through this list, and we're all like, no way. And so we're talking to him afterward. And so for them, this right here, wine is worship. It's about being connected to the earth. It's about being connected to this creation, this land that God made and called good. And by the way, the one thing that they would never do, guess what the one thing they would never do is? get drunk. That would be the ultimate offense. Taking something so beautiful that God created and abusing it. So lastly, next. Wine, which is a symbol of heaven, is about wholeness with the earth. Next slide. So that's how the prophets kind of interact with some of these ideas. So let's head to Jesus. Yes, I left you there. This is Jesus' kind of coming out miracle. John kind of opens his story with all these grand claims about Jesus, but this is the first time he kind of comes out of the closet as the Messiah. And we'll start in chapter 2. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman," which is kind of a it's kind of an intimate term. "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." Jesus, ignoring Jesus completely, Jesus' mother says to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you to do." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water," and they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw out some and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink." Something just very true about that, isn't there? But you have saved the best till now. This is the first of the signs. And if you're following along, you could maybe just highlight signs. Signs are a big deal for John. And the point of a sign isn't the sign itself, but it's what the sign points to. So he wants you to see something here. Why does John open his signs with this particular sign? So let's ask just a few questions about what's going on. What are we drinking? Yeah. That was the theme song I requested. So well done. So this is a wedding feast. Cana is tiny, and so this much wine implies that there are neighboring villages. And actually, this is this culture is shame-based, or maybe not shame-based, honor-based would be a better way of putting it. So there's a lot of writing on the line here. That economic relationship that I was talking about earlier, this is, if they run out of wine, there is much shame that is brought to the family. This is about family name. This isn't just about, oh, everyone's disappointed. Because if you go to a wedding and they run out of alcohol, yes, it is disappointing. But this is about, like, years down the line, you're the son of the daughter of the son who threw a giant party and couldn't pay for it all. So don't do business with them. Like, don't bring them into the oikos, into the economy. So there's a ton right on the line here when this happens. So what are we drinking? Wine. Great. And where are we? What's the setting? Wedding feast. Right. So we have wine, which is a symbol of people being in whole relationship with each other. We have a wedding, which is a symbol of God and people together, like the Ten Commandments were seen as the marriage of God and people. So we have wholeness with each other, and we have wholeness with God, second dimension. Who is pleased? The master of the banquet. The master is pleased. And lastly, what day is it again? Anyone catch that at the very beginning? Third day. Did anything else happen on a third day? All of the lights on your resurrection dashboard should be blinking. He rose from the dead. So we have resurrection, which is all about wholeness with your physicality, the renewal of your body, the renewal of the earth. So it's wholeness with the earth. So we have wholeness with God, wholeness with each other, and wholeness with the earth, all coming together in this one story. And we have a pastor who is pleased. John, Juan, what are you doing? Like, what is the point of this sign? This is way more than a party trick. And actually, when this story gets reduced down into, hey, look, Jesus can mess around with physics, I think you lose what John is really trying to say here. What does John think is going on? Heaven and earth are mingling. Heaven and earth are meeting here. Heaven and earth are embracing. Heaven and earth are kissing here. This is what it looks like when heaven and earth become one in the same place. And when that happens, there are six stone water jars, and yet there's more than enough for everybody. So that's how the prophets interact with these ideas. That's how Jesus, who in many ways was carrying on this great prophetic tradition, interact with these ideas. So how did the first Christians take all of this and incorporate it into their lives and their churches? Next. In Hebrews 13 we find, do not neglect to do good and share what you have. 1 Timothy 6, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. Luke 3, and he answered them, whoever has two tunics to share with him who has none, and whoever has food is to do likewise. Next. This is the classic one, Acts 4, I'm sure you've heard it. Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul. And no one said that any of the things that belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. So with great power, the apostles were giving testimony to the resurrection of Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not any needy person among them. For as many as were owners of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds to what was sold and laid it at the apostles' feet. And it was distributed to anyone who had any need. Next. The best iteration of this I actually saw while I was in South Africa also. We were training people from the townships to use really advanced software like Photoshop and some accounting software and whatever. Our idea was, these people are just as intelligent as we are, and they just don't have access to the same opportunities, so let's give them crazy advanced skills that are highly marketable in that culture, because in that culture, nobody knows how to do that stuff except for a very small elite people, and they make a lot of money. So we were like, well, let's see what we can do about that. So we started training them, and it was really fun, and they learned really fast, and actually after we started paying them, they all bought glasses, because I didn't realize, I mean, think of how many people around here wear glasses. And those little symbols on the screen, they're like right next to the screen trying to figure it out. So that was the first purchase they all made, was glasses so they can actually see what they're doing. But what they would do every week when we would pay them, they would put all of their money, all the wages, into one pot. And then they would go around the circle and ask each other who had the most need. And whoever had the most need that week, they would give all of the wages to that one person. And so one girl had a baby during that time, and so for like 3 or 4 weeks straight, they gave her all of the wages. And in fact, these people, there's always one gate into the township, and it's heavily like guarded. And at this particular time, while we were there a few months in, they blew it up. There was a riot, and there was like fire and just chunks of road, and the gate was inaccessible, and there were riots, and there were cops shooting bullets into the crowd. There were women in there who had babies that were like getting pelted. It was the most insane thing. And they all still came to work. Like, for me, I would probably be like, the gate's blown up. There are riots and shootings. I'm not going to come to work today. They would scale the wall around the township and still come to work, which I feel is dedication that I just have never seen before. So this was their way of sharing their resources and making sure that everybody had enough. So a few months ago, I did a kind of God talk thing on the earth. And we kind of had an idea was born out of that to kind of start something like this at Rose City, tapping into some of these ideas. It seems to be a thread that weaves all throughout the scriptures that's picked up and carried at really every major junction in the scriptures and in the gospel story. So what are we supposed to do about that? Like, what happens then? So this, I'm going to kind of describe where we are with that. Next slide. We've decided to start a barter economy. And I'm calling it the Share Store for now. If you have a better name, I'm all ears. But basically what we've been doing for the last couple months is collecting goods. So we have some shelves, we have a bunch of books, we have DVDs, we've got a Wii and a Wii Fit board in case you like one of those. A bunch of them have been donated that we're kind of sorting through. I actually was going to try to have it ready today, and I was moving stuff around the balcony and cleaning it all out over Christmas break, and I injured myself. And so that slowed me down a little bit. But it actually turned out well because a couple weeks ago, someone donated 400 square feet of wood flooring that just happens to match our pillars and all the baseboards. So we're in the process of reflooring the whole balcony. And then after church or before church or whatever, it will be open. You can come if you need anything. There's also a benevolence fund. So there's money available if you need like help with rent or whatever. There's all this stuff available. So basically, if you want to sign up for this kind of a thing, what's going to happen is I have an email address called share@rosecitychurch.org, and I will be sending out emails every couple weeks with new items that we have. So if you need anything, just speak first and you'll get it. Also, if you would like to donate anything, email me at that address, or come see me after church at any point or whatever. If you have anything that you would like to share or donate, that's great. And so we have quite a bit, but we could always use more. I'm going to run over to Barbara's house at some point. She's been very generous, and she actually told me, she was like, I have all this stuff that I've just been hoping someone will ask. Yeah, totally. So we're going to try to consolidate that, and you can come up and just browse through it or whatever. The other side of it is this. This is the really, really impossibly hard side. And I went through a period in my life when I kind of like lost everything. Girl I wanted to marry, business, everything went down. And I learned through that experience how to ask for help. And that is really freaking hard to ask for help. So I'm hoping that this experience will help us all. If you have a need, I know it sucks and I know it's hard. Just email. I am the only one that's looking at that email address, share@rosecitychurch.org. If you need anything, it could be anything you could possibly think of. Let me know, because we might have it, or we might be able to get it. This is a grand experiment. I don't know if it's going to work, but it was just something that came up, and we thought this could be really amazing, because my heart is that we would each take care of each other, and that this would be a community in which we love each other enough to help. So that's my teaching. I have one final thought. Next slide. If you go back to the wedding feast at Cana story and read through it on your own, you'll notice that Jesus never turns water into wine. There's no verse that says, and then Jesus turned water into wine. Now, when we talk about the story, we obviously are like, yeah, it's when Jesus turned water into wine. But if you actually read the text, that's not what the text says. What it says is that Jesus' mom comes up to Jesus, and Jesus is like, I don't know what to do. And he's like, and she's like, do whatever he tells you to do. She tells the servants, just do whatever he tells you to do. And when the servants actually do what Jesus says to do, a miracle occurs, a master is pleased, everything comes together, and there's more than enough for everybody. Now, it's Jesus' authority and Jesus' power, but he just happens to use who? Servants. So what is John saying? Maybe the real miracles are when we actually do what Jesus says to do. Maybe that's the thing. And maybe when we actually do what Jesus says to do, that's when there's more than enough for everybody.
Let's take some time to pray. But Matt has let out one of the cats in our bag for Sabbath this year. That's the share store. We're going to be practicing sharing together this year of Sabbath. 7 Sabbath practices that we'll be unveiling throughout Lent, and one of them will be sharing. But we wanted that to come up front and center because I think that's going to be one of the hardest ones for us, and one of the ones we need to get out there right away, right now. And also, so we can begin collecting the donations, the items that we can use to redistribute among each other. So let's take a moment and just commit this share store to prayer and how God wants to use it and what God wants to do in blessing people of this community and outside as well. And but it also kind of just makes me simply think of, when you gather to eat together, you always say a prayer before you eat to say thanks. So I think prayers of thanksgiving for God's abundance and what he has provided for us are appropriate at this time as well. So let's pray.